From Utah Public Radio, this is Undisciplined. I'm Matthew LaPlante. When you picture yourself in the natural world, what do you envision? Well, if you're like a lot of people right now, you're thinking of a forest, or maybe it's a rolling hillside or a beach or a desert. What it probably isn't is a city. But of course, cities are where humans are increasingly choosing to live. Globally, right now, about 50% of the population lives in urban areas. And in the next 20 years, it's expected that the world's urban population will double. And when we think about nature in the ways that most people think about nature, as something decidedly rural, if not completely undeveloped, the implication is that we are getting further and further away from the natural world. And that's a problem, because nature is really good for us. Research suggests that it can help decrease anxiety, it can lessen stress, it can improve concentration, it can reduce blood pressure, it can improve immune function, and it can make us sleep in a more restorative way. And if nature is something that is removed from us, if to get its benefits we need to go to a forest or a beach or a desert, then it would seem that many of us are missing out, and more of us will be missing out as our population continues to urbanize. But Brittany Gowan says it doesn't have to be that way. Gowan lives in New York City, which is probably not a lot of people's idea of the natural world, and yet she feels constantly connected to nature. In no small part because while the entire landscape of a city is maybe nobody's idea of natural, nature can be found just about everywhere within that landscape. It's there in a potted plant. It's there on an ivy vine climbing up the side of a building. It's a bird on a wire and an insect on a windowsill. And Gowan believes that when we study these parts of our world with childlike wonder, we can benefit just as we would if we were completely immersed in one of those idealized natural worlds. Gowan is the creator of a stress relief method known as Pause with Plants, and she's the author of the new book, Turn to the Sun, which is a guide for releasing stress and cultivating better health through nature, no matter where you are. Brittany Gowan, welcome.
Thank you, Matthew. I'm so glad to be here with you today. Thank you for having me.
Brittany, I wanted to start today by talking to you about the place where you live in New York, your neighborhood, your environment. But I wanted to try something here. I'd like to ask you to do this by putting sort of a filter on this image. And first, just describe this place without the plants and animals that are around you. Can you do that?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, of course, because I also, besides loving nature, I do love the concrete jungle, and it's why I've been in New York for so many years. But yeah, so I would describe where I live. It's called Alphabet City, and the buildings are like 5 stories tall, a lot of brick. We have concrete streets. We have outdoor dining. We have bars, restaurants, fluorescent lights, cars, car horns, and a ton of people going this way and that, busy and always in a rush, and laughter and loudness is how I would describe my area and how I would describe New York in general.
When you envision the world in just that way, like, what does that do to you physically? What do you feel right now?
Well, when I think about that, it energizes me, and it's why I've been attracted to city life since I was a kid. But at the same time, there is that energy it creates, but there also is that feeling of chaos or anxiety, stress. So it is that combination, and it really depends on how you relate to it. And I think for people, it can be both at the same time, which it is for me.
But if we put some color back into this world, like if we now fill in that same image with the nature that is part of that as well, what does that look like?
So I'm very lucky to be in the neighborhood that I'm in because there are a bunch of community gardens that have been protected for many decades, and they really are a respite for the community and for people like me. We also have a large park that is just a few blocks from where I live, and most of the streets are tree-lined. So it is a space where you are very much in the city, but at the same time, it's very easy to connect to nature. And this isn't the neighborhood I originally started off in New York, and it's something that I have grown to appreciate and want to be in as I've spent more time in New York.
The neighborhood that you first moved into wasn't quite as urbanistically picturesque.
No, it was Midtown East and land of, you know, concrete tall buildings. I worked in the Chrysler Building, and it couldn't be more different from where I am now, but it's where I got my start. And it also, at that time, I really started to connect with nature in little pockets. So there was a park that was nearby, it's called Tudor City. And I started to go there on my lunch breaks and sometimes on the weekends. And like I've said, with like people in city life, you have to get creative when you want to connect with nature, when you want to restore your calm in a certain way. So much different, but actually that was the catalyst for me being able to connect with nature in the city, because I really had to seek it out.
And you, like you said, living in New York, you like the concrete jungle, you like an urban existence, but it's that totality of experience with the urban part of this environment and also these, as you say, these little pockets of nature that you find that gives you a fullness of self when you are there, yes?
I believe so, yes. And I think that for me, I always see myself in a city environment, and to sustain that ability to stay in the city and feel calm and feel rested, all these other things, that my connection with nature that I've created over the many years allows me to continue to feel like this is something I can do, something that I want to do. So it definitely is in tandem, and I wouldn't feel as calm or as resilient if I didn't have that nature that really restores my daily life.
Part of the stress relief practice that you teach and you describe in this book is about bringing nature into your spaces. It's about house plants and small gardens. Those are actions we can take to naturify our environments. But the other element is about exploration and appreciation. And this is where this concept of pausing with plants comes in, because it's easy in an urban environment to ignore things, right? Like, we're sort of wired to ignore little things, but this is why you talk about dedicating attention to, and I like the way you put this, the small slivers of life that are growing all around us.
Yeah, I think that in general, when we want to change something or we want to bring something into our lives, as a coach for many years, like, I teach people to bring it in small ways. And for me with nature, it was those little inclusions into my day, and continues to be the way that I practice this. And it could be, for me, you know, rushing out of my apartment and going towards the subway. A couple of weeks ago, the daffodils were out, and I was like, oh, that's really pretty yellow. It's so beautiful. And it was just a moment, but it allowed me to feel really present in a place that can really make you fast forward or just be kind of in the future or ruminating on something. And that is the whole concept of pause with plants, and how I started many years ago in the city, of just taking that intentional pause. And it can literally be that, just that pause of appreciation of present moment, and it can really change how you're feeling throughout the day.
But this is a practice. Practice takes practice. It's not easy to get to that place.
No, it's not. And it, like anything that we want in our lives, whether it's maybe something related to a job or it's fitness or relationship, it takes inclusion into, you know, our daily life. And I like to encourage people to see places where it's easy to include, maybe on your morning walk when you're getting a coffee, or after work when you're driving home, or you're stopping by even a grocery store and you're seeing like a planter outside of the doors, having these little moments that you're like, okay, that's beautiful. I'm going to appreciate it for a moment. I'm going to move on. But remembering that it has to be a part of your daily life, like anything that benefits your mental, physical, emotional well-being.
And part of this is learning to recognize as nature these things that might not be the first thing we think about when we think about nature, right? Like we close our eyes and we think about nature and, oh, I'm in the forest or I'm on the beach. But you mentioned a planter, right? Like flowers growing in a planter, that's part of our natural world.
Yeah. And I think that sometimes when you experience those in a way that is intentional, it can be even more profound because, as you said, it's stuff that we can easily pass by. As I said in the book, just the dandelions growing up between the cracks or a sunflower that was planted by someone and it comes up in September. These little moments that someone purposely planted something for the beauty and enjoyment of others, and it's to our benefit to take a moment to really connect with it.
There's something too about the contrast, I think. You're a photographer. Is that part of what drew you to how profound these moments can be?
For me, being in New York, my camera has always been my consistent friend in a city that's very transient. And I started to bring my camera out and take the combination of nature in urban life. And I've been fascinated by it since 2008. And it's been included into how I live my day of, even if I don't have my camera, I think that awareness has definitely increased my ability to see these connections and really cherish them. And it has added to what I do personally, professionally.
Was there a moment when you kind of had that aha, where you went, wait a second, this way of seeing things is really good for me. I'll bet maybe some other people would be really helped if they were seeing things this way too. Because, you know, like so often the way we see the world, we just sort of assume, oh yeah, other people have kind of figured that out. But at some point you realize that other people weren't seeing the world like that.
You know, I think for me, it occurred earlier than I took action on it, but it was something that even in my first job in the city, I would bring once in a while some of my coworkers with me to go to this this park area at lunch, and they'd be like, "Oh, this is so nice." I'm like, "Yeah, like you just got to get out, even just 20 minutes." Like we didn't, you know, have a long time away from the office, but just to get out, and I would see how they would release stress similar to how I would. Because I really believe that everyone has a connection to the natural world, a story, a link, which creates a relatable teaching tool. So over the years, that just evolved into how I coach people and how I help them to really protect their mental health and improve it.
You have also suggested that at least once in a while, it is important for us to return to the wild, like those sorts of settings that we described earlier, where the world still looks mostly like it did before our species got so good at mucking up the natural landscapes. Where's the place that you go when you need that?
So physically, I will go to a national seashore. I love Cape Cod or Latin America. Some of the beaches in Nicaragua are my absolute favorite for just totally getting into the present moment and feeling like I'm in the wild. But I encourage people, like I can't always go back to those places, but remembering how they feel and how you feel in those experiences in your mind. So remembering how the sand feels, how the wind is, what the air is like, what the sunset looks like. And I have in the book where, yeah, we can always return to the wild in our minds, if not necessarily in our steps. And I think that definitely in urban environments where it is so man-made, I like to remember, okay, like there's the rainforest out there, you know, there's massive waterfalls, and keeping that huge connection when I can't, you know, hop on a plane and go to those special places.
You wrote in the book that you sometimes need to remember that even the place you live, even New York City, was once this wild, untamed place.
Yeah. And I try to remind myself of that frequently because it's easy just to get caught up with what it looks like now and what it will look like in years to come as it continues to be redeveloped and redeveloped. And going to spots that have been wild for much longer than other areas are, you know, one way that I like to remember what it looked like.
We talk a lot about nature in terms of plants and animals, but you've written that an important part of the natural world, one that I think we forget about all the time, we don't even think about it as part of nature, is light. Talk about that.
I've always been fascinated by light, and I know that it's connected to my love of photography and that play of capturing light, nature, and urban life all together. And I think that light is also one of those things that we can see related to our human existence, and seeing that, you know, going towards the light, whether it is physically the sunshine or something positive, is always the mindset that we want to be in. And I think that when we notice how light interacts with plant life, so say like a dark green leaf, if the light gets on it and now it's like a chartreuse, it's a great reminder that when we look for positivity or change, it's always there, and light comes in different forms.
I think city life can be so enveloping. And the nice thing about light, if you are reflecting on it and its source, is that even in, you know, this urban, concrete, canyonistic landscape, it reaches you. And if you reflect on that, you recognize that you are certainly enveloped by the city, but the city is enveloped by nature.
100%. And I think too, like when you look at nature and you see certain plants growing and thriving, even though the buildings might cast shadows on them for, you know, most of the day, they do reach the light. And I think that, like you said, your example and also the example of nature noticing how light hits it and how it then goes away for a long period of time, it's all inspiring and motivating.
I'm a pretty big believer in the power of using small gains to build capacity toward bigger positive changes in our lives. So I was pretty happy to see the section you wrote about celebrating small wins. You wrote that any encounter with the natural world, no matter how seemingly small, is a step toward the vastness of nature that we need in our lives.
I'm a big fan of small wins, both from being a coach and just for my personal life. And I think that, say, like looking at a tree that has lost a limb, but a new branch is growing from it. There's all these examples, or like a flower that's like been bent down after a huge rainstorm that's perking back up. All of these things that appear small, but are actually grand, and also show us that our small wins are as remarkable.
Let's talk about some small things in your life. Early into your time in New York, you acquired three little succulent plants. You named them Jane, Bleecker, and Houston after three streets in Lower Manhattan. And I thought the act of giving names to these plants was particularly interesting in the context of the way that you ask your readers to think about growth and cultivation, which, you know, even for someone who doesn't have a lot of time or a lot of money, this offers us an opportunity to do something that we are really designed to do, which is caring for another creature.
I agree. And I think that for those three, I had gone down to the Union Square Market, and I was like, I need some like little house plants in my apartment. And when I got them, I was thinking, I always like to name things. And I really loved the village, and that's where those streets come from, and I desire to live there someday, which I ended up, you know, having lived there for a long time. And this is the area that I connect with. These are the streets that bring me happiness or are known. And so by naming them that, I also felt like, besides the fact that I was caring for them and they were growing, that it also was allowing me to grow and remember my goals in the city and where I wanted to be and how I wanted to be connecting with myself and my living environment. So I think that plants can teach us so many things, from compassion to also helping us stay focused on where we want to grow next.
You have a lot more plants now. Do you still name them?
They still have their names, and most people know their names as well, so they've become a little famous.
My grandmother used to talk to her plants. Do you talk to your plants?
Not really, in like a funny way. My grandma used to do that too. I definitely got a love of houseplants from her, but some of my plants, like during the pandemic, went to my parents' house. And so my mom and I, when a new leaf comes out of my big bird of paradise, we'll be like, oh my gosh, you're doing so well. This is amazing. Like, and it also makes you feel good, you know? And I think that plants also allow you to say, if you're saying something nice to your plant, it's also in a way saying something nice to yourself and getting in the mindset of being kind and compassionate. So, we still talk a little bit.
What's the bird of paradise named?
Her name is Belita. In Spanish class, when I was younger, there wasn't like a Brittany equivalent. And I saw that there was a Belita. So my name was Belita for so many years. And when I got the bird of paradise, I'm a fan of alliterations. And I was like, well, this is Belita, the bird of paradise. So that's what we stuck with.
And it's also, I mean, to this point where when you were talking to the plant, you're talking to yourself, this is a plant that you sort of named after yourself. So you are really talking to yourself.
100%. And I think I've thought about that over the years. I'm like, you kind of named her after yourself. And she has really thrived, even though the environment that she's been in. I mean, she's a, you know, it's a tropical plant. Central New York, where the plant now lives, isn't ideal, but done amazing. So it inspires me to keep on, even if I hit some roadblocks, because that plant has managed to do very well.
That's another great and sort of beautiful reflection, I think, this idea that plants can survive in places that, you know, in the wild natural world, they would not belong. And I think so many of us feel often like we are in places that we don't belong. But for one reason or another, we don't have much of a choice about that. But plants show us that we can survive and thrive.
Yes. And even if it feels like unfavorable in the moment, by allowing yourself to just stick it out and also grow in the process, you'll probably end up, in my opinion, where you really wanted to be and doing well.
The mindful mantra at the center of this book is breathe in nature and breathe out stress. You have been practicing this meditation for a long time. You've taught it to other people. Now you've written about it. But even though it sounds really simple, these are practices that can be hard when life is feeling hard. So I'm wondering when it is most challenging for you to breathe in nature and breathe out stress.
You know, I would say, and that line I came up with when I was walking the streets one day, and I've said it to myself countless times since then, is also a mindset, just saying, you know, breathe in nature, breathe out stress, like I can do this kind of thing. And I would say that a hard place for me to feel that is, let's say, in the subway when the train's delayed and you're stuck between the stations. And what I say to myself is, okay, let's imagine that you're in a community garden or you're on an expansive beach or in the forest. And I force myself to go to that place and take a really deep breath in and out as everyone waits for the train to get going. But there are so many, you know, times in our life when it feels like you can't retrieve that calm. But I like that example because it is nowhere close to nature, but I still can manage to feel the benefits if I intentionally say I'm going to pause here and I'm going to imagine the natural world and I'm going to calm down during a time where I can't control what's happening.
That's Brittany Gowan. She's the creator of a stress relief method known as Pause with Plants. And she is the author of a new book called Turn to the Sun. Brittany Gowan, thank you.
Thank you so much, Matthew. This is great.
Undisciplined is a production of Utah Public Radio. And if you happen to live in Utah, you can listen to us on UPR every Thursday morning at 10:30. If you miss us then, you can listen to every episode of Undisciplined wherever you get your podcasts. Our program is supported by the College of Humanities and Social Sciences at Utah State University and, of course, from listeners like you. You can support our work at donate.nprstations.org/UPR. Our producer is Reagan Edelman. Our theme music is Little Idea by Benjamin Tissot. And I'm Matthew LaPlante. Thanks for listening. Now go have big ideas.